Tune in to the Family Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the Secret Kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Right here on Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And no guest today. And I think I'm going to do a little reading and do a little discussion before we play clips. Maybe we won't even play clips. I thought I would start out from the Bible, from the book of Mark, and read this section about the barren fig tree. And then we can discuss it. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry, seeing in the distance a fig tree. In the leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for the figs. Then he said, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say this. Now, this is quite strange because now I've always wondered about this particular thing. Here, it's not even the season for the fruit to show up. And Jesus isn't too happy here. He says, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And if you're looking, the book of Matthew, the tree withers. Now, they don't say that here, but I think it's kind of inferred almost, you could say. So here's Jesus. He's going to this tree. He's looking for fruit, and there aren't any. And he said, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. So it's kind of a situation where Jesus expected fruit to be there. And I guess fruit would be like figs, which are symbolic of us producing some kind of output, let's say, in our Christian walk. Now, the next section is where Jesus drives people out of the temple. And that also is a bit, it has some strangeness to it. But let me read and then we can talk about it. It says, on reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches and the beach changers and the beaches of those, the benches of those selling doves. And he would not allow anyone to carry the merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. So people were in there selling things, trying to, you know, literally rob money from each other, making illegal deals or deals that were unethical, kind of like a lot of what business goes on today. The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him. And this could be what pushed him over the edge, where they knew they were going to kill Jesus. For they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. When evening came, they went out of the city. In the morning, as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. So I was correct. It is like Matthew. The fig tree is withered. And that's an example of the power of Christ's thoughts. May no one ever eat fruit from you again. Peter remembered and said to Jesus, Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered. Verse 22, have faith in God, Jesus answered. I tell you the truth, if anyone says to the mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart and believes what he says will happen, it will be done for him. Now, I don't know if anyone listening now or anyone that will listen to this in the future is aware of the book Mach der Gedanken, The Might of Thoughts, written by Billy Meyer. This is such an interesting intersection between the teaching of the Bible and the teaching of Edward Albert Meyer, the contactee in Switzerland with a nice big beard. So I've kind of tried to emulate him in some ways. But in any case, the power of our thoughts is incredible. I was looking at something the other day in one of his writings that says, I'm not recalling here exact moment. It says, it was saying about how our thoughts attract to us what we are. I was going to try to quote it to you exactly, but I haven't. That's not one that I've looked at a whole lot in any way. But anyway, it says, therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe what you have that you have received it, and it will be yours. So, and that's the whole concept from the Might of Thoughts, is that our thoughts have great power. We'll continue. You know what? Maybe I'll switch over to the Might of Thoughts real quick, and we'll come back, because I had to kind of get my mind moving this morning. It's not quite moving, except maybe backwards. This is from page 38 of the Might of Thoughts. It says, wishes and prayers are never petitions to a god or a saint. Now, Billy has some different ideas about God, and we'll probably talk about that. Rather, they are thoughts generated by oneself, which are fed back out of the consciousness and the inner self to one's own consciousness and inner self, so thereby to create a fulfillment. If wishes and prayers are directed in this way at one's own consciousness and inner self, and the thought and the actions are thereby identically maintained, then a success of fulfillment is also granted. You know, when we talk about God, usually from the biblical point of view, we're thinking of God the Holy Spirit or God the Father. The Meyer teaching describes something called the creation. And creation would be analogous to our universe. And the universe that we live in is a living being. And according to the Meyer information, and so I'm not going to say according to the Meyer information all the time, so I'll kind of take Billy's aspect on this as the truth, and then we'll just go from there. So the creation is the universal consciousness. Our universe has its own consciousness, and it has no personality, though. Now, a dog, a cat, a horse, a human being has personality. So we tend towards whatever the tendencies of our personality are. If we tend to be a happy person, then we'll be happy. If we tend to be a very serious person, we'll tend to be more serious. So we have different aspects based on the personality that we've developed over time. And I think personalities change. But the universal consciousness has no personality, so that aspect does not change. The universe changes because its goal is to evolve. And it evolves through striving. And the same way we as human beings evolve through striving, meaning work. You know, striving can be just cleaning out your garage, but striving could be reading a book to learn something or a new skill. Striving could be some manual labor you may be doing at the moment, whether for your job or for cleaning, you know, maybe your gardening. That's striving too. And that's the key to happiness, really, in life, is striving. If you don't strive, you're not going to have any happiness. People think that they're going to be happy through entertainment or alcohol or food or whatever, sex. But really, we're designed to work, to strive. And that's where our happiness comes from. It doesn't come from these other aspects. I mean, sure, you need to take time to rest, to lay in the sun, to spend time with your pets and your family and things like that. But striving is the key to your happiness. It's not making money, although making money and striving could be part of the same, two sides of the same coin or whatever. Now, Billy, I'll take a slight tangent on Billy and then we'll come back to our verse here in Mark. Billy, in 1943, started to get telepathic messages from a man named Svath. Svath is an extraterrestrial human being from a different space-time configuration in a different world, but a world very much like ours. His name is Svath, and he landed a silvery pear-shaped craft not far from Billy's home in northern Switzerland at that time. And Billy went on the ship, and Svath took Billy up into an orbit around the Earth. And Svath started to teach Billy things. He told Billy that Billy had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught something called the teaching of the spirit, which would teach different aspects of a certain way of life that you could live in order to be in sync with this universal consciousness. So this universal consciousness is continually striving to improve itself. So one of the things we should be doing is continually striving to improve ourselves. So and why? Well, you say, why should I be working all the time? Why should I be striving all the time? Because, well, this is what's going to bring you your happiness. And this is the purpose of your life. So, in all of these previous lifetimes, Billy had was striving to teach these spiritual truths to people of the earth so that the earth would evolve a little faster. Now, the people on the earth are not evolving so very well in terms of spiritually. So let me give an example of the earth humans not evolving so well. So I'll pick back up with the story here with Jesus. It says, and they were talking about the fig tree that the fig tree that had withered. So the fig tree that had withered is symbolic of the people that are not striving. And their fig tree will wither, just like yours and mine will wither if we don't continue striving. So, for example, even if you're in the retirement years, you just have something to strive for. Otherwise, you're going to be withering like the fig tree here. I tell you the truth, if anyone says to the mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes what he says will happen, it will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe what you have received, and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive him, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins. Here in the Bible, we talk about the Father in heaven. In the Meyer teaching, we would be talking about creation. They arrived again in Jerusalem while Jesus was walking in the temple courts. The chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders who came to him. But by what authority are you doing these things, they asked. And who gave you authority to do this? Jesus replied, I will ask you one question. Answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. To John's baptism, was it from heaven or from men? Tell me. They discussed it among themselves and said, if we say from heaven, he will ask, then why didn't you believe him? But if we say from men, they feared the people, for everyone held that John really was a prophet. So they answered Jesus, we don't know. Jesus said, neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things. Now, I was talking about how people on the earth were not doing so well in our spiritual growth. And the next section is called the parable of the tenants. And what these tenants are going to, how they're going to behave spiritually is pretty bad. And it's kind of the way we're living here on the earth today. It says, he then began to speak to them in parables. A man planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it, dug a pit for the wine press, and built a watchtower. Then he rented the vineyard to some farmers and went away on a journey. At harvest time, he sent a servant to the tenants to collect from them some of the fruit of the vineyard. But they seized him, beat him, and sent him away empty-handed. Then he sent another servant to them. They struck him on the head and treated him shamefully. He sent still another, and that one they killed. They sent many others, some of them they beat, others they killed. He had one left to send, a son, whom he loved. He sent him last of all, saying, "They will respect my son." But the tenants said to one another, "This is the heir. Come, let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they took him and killed him and threw him out of the vineyard. What then will the owner of the vineyard do? He will come and kill these tenants and give the vineyards to others. Haven't you read the scripture? The stone the builders rejected has become the capstone, and the Lord has done this. It is marvelous in our eyes. So all these tenants did all this evil and beat these people who just came for a little bit of the, came for the fruit again, just like there was no fruit at the fig tree. They weren't going to give any fruit, and they ended up dead because of it. Now, Billy Meyer, the Billy Meyer teaching says there is such a thing as reincarnation, and that we each have something called a spirit form. The spirit form, it's the part of you that never dies. It's a fragment of this universal consciousness, and it lives below an area of your middle brain called the superior colliculus. And it absorbs information that you learn from your current lifetime. So your whole lifetime, it's like a recorder that's recording. But it doesn't record everything. It only records that which is neutral positive, that which is spiritually valuable. So if you acted like an idiot for a certain, let's say for 10 minutes, you lost your temper or act like an idiot or did something, the spirit form will not record that time because it has no value in terms of moving the spirit form ahead in its spiritual advance. So the universe that we live in has its own consciousness, and it is stays in a state called neutral positive, which it isn't overly joyed and it isn't depressed. So we always want to evaluate our own thinking. Is our thoughts are in any moment, we should have a constant analysis going on with our evaluating where our thinking is. Is our thinking neutral positive? Is it way, way positive? If it's way positive, you're going to crash, just like a junkie. If it's low, if it's negative, if you're upset or depressed, and you're rotating negative thoughts, that's not good either, because that'll pull your whole psyche down. That's very damaging. That can cause mental illness damage. So anyway, Svath, this old extraterrestrial human, he was really 700 years old. He was a Plearian. He lived on a planet called Era, which is some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. People always talk about the Pleiadians as being from the Pleiades. But these are really not Pleiadians. They're Plearian. And they live some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. Our universes have spaced what are called space-time configurations. And our Earth is situated in a solar system called the Sol system, and it's in a different space-time configuration than the Pleiaren. So our material reality is like in a different dimension, which, you know, what do we know about dimensions? Almost nothing. So I don't feel real comfortable ever talking too much about these dimensions, but other than we kind of know they exist. And our universe is called the Dern universe in the Meyer teaching. We have a parallel sister universe, which I believe is in a different space-time configuration as well. It's called the Tao universe. And Billy had another mentor from this Tao universe named Asket. And perhaps we'll talk about her a little bit. But I want to get back to these tenants that killed all the people that were rightly coming to get the fruit of the vineyard. You know you're getting a little older when you've got a... I've got my special reading glasses just for the Bible because the text is so small in the Bible. I use my other glasses for the Meyer reading, and I can actually read this Meyer book without glasses if I have to, but it's a little bit hard on the eyes. But in any case, let me continue here. It says, later they sent some of the Pharisees and the Herodians to Jesus to catch him in his words. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by men, because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance to the truth. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we?" And Jesus knew their hypocrisy. "Why are you trying to trap me?" he says. "Bring me a denarius and let me look at it." They brought the coin, and he asked them, "Whose portrait is this? And whose inscription?" "Caesar," they replied. Then Jesus said to them, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God." They were amazed at him. Then the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to him with a question. "Teacher," they said, "Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies..." I'm going to stop here just for a second. This is the question of these Pharisees is so convoluted because it talks about a man marrying a woman and the man dies and then the brother comes to take care of his brother, dead brother's wife, and they do this for like seven different brothers and they all die, and Jesus tells them, look. This won't matter in the resurrection because you're not going to be in a physical body anyway. So I'll read that little section and I want to get back onto some other things. He says, "Are you not in error because you do not know the scriptures or the power of God? When the dead rise, they will neither marry nor will be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. Now, about the dead rising, have you not read in the book of Moses, in the account of the bush, how God said to him, 'I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob'? He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. You are badly mistaken." So, anyway, that's... I try to read a couple pages in the Bible every day. I read part of that today. But you can see how confused these people are. And you can see how evil they are. And they kill the people that were watching, you know, that came to the vineyard. And the guy even sent his own son to the vineyard, and they kill him too. So the whole thing is building up to the crucifixion, which is coming soon. The Meyer teaching talks about the Talmud of Emmanuel, and they say that the person that we call Jesus Christ wasn't really called Jesus Christ in his lifetime, because the letter J didn't really exist in the ancient languages like Aramaic and Hebrew. You know, we say Jerusalem and we say Jesus, but there was no letter J in the ancient world. So we say Jesus and we say Jerusalem and we say James and we say John, but they would usually speak an I or a Y in that case for Jerusalem, or they wouldn't say John or James. It becomes harder and harder for us to pronounce with the Y or the I at the beginning instead of the J. The J didn't come around in history until about, from what I've read, not until about 14, 1500s, maybe 1600s, did we really get the letter J. So that's why the Meyer information has the book, The Talmud of Emmanuel, and they call him Emmanuel, which we translate as God with us. And I'm no expert in translation, but I do run across the issue a lot. Dr. Lorraine Day is a real good person to listen to on how we got our Bible, and she argues that there really is no hell, which is an amazing argument considering all the stuff in the Bible related to hell. She says it was all added or mistranslated. She recently died, which still is a shocker to me. I don't know if she was killed. I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all. She seemed in perfect health, and then all of a sudden, boom, she's gone. We live in a very dark time. Dr. Lorraine Day was saying that we were very near the tribulation. And in fact, I think she says we were right at the very beginning of it. And that the all of the COVID was related to things mentioned in the Bible, like the plagues and whatnot. And we could talk about the abomination of desolation a little bit, which is going to be, well, let me just read this here. It says, then you will see the abomination that causes desolation, standing where it does not belong. Let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one. So this is during the time of the Antichrist, which I think we are in. Those QR codes, I believe, are related to this whole Mark of the Beast system. It talks about the Mark of the Beast on the forehead and the hand. I'm not sure if that's a literal mark on the forehead and the hand that you'll be able to hear or see, but it could be. I think the trends, I think the shots that refer to the COVID were designed to attack our genetics. Just like back in Genesis 6, where we had the attack on human genetics. It's occurring again, and I guess that means history repeats itself. Maybe I can find that real quickly. It would be Genesis 6. As you listen to me turn the pages. You know, there were, and there are differences, there are very different interpretations of what I'm about to read. Some people say it's basically a misunderstanding. These giants were just people. I think that's Dr. Lorraine Day would say that others have different perspective. But let's read a little bit of that and we'll contemplate it. When man began to increase in the number on the earth and the daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them that they chose. Okay, first of all, kudos to the earth women for being so beautiful. And the sons of God, now, who are these sons of God? Are they angels? Some say angels. Some say this is where the angels parted, the fall of the angels. And they married them. I'm assuming that that meant that they had sex with them. I don't know if they actually fulfilled marriage contract or not. Then the Lord said, my spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal. His days will be 120 years. And this was before. So part of the judgment of our shortened lifespan is that these sons of God, Bnei HaElohim, married the women of the earth, had sex with them. And because of that, God reduced our, and of course, who is God in this passage? Is it the universal consciousness talked by, about by Billy Meyer? Is it Mara Bigelinu says that Elohim, the Hebrew word Elohim, is really a category of people. But the Elohim in this case said man will only live 120 years on the earth after this sin. Boom. Before that, we lived 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 years. Now, it's very interesting. The Meyer information talks about a genetic manipulation that was done to... Oh, this is a very, very long story. Some of the big challenge in all this information is summarizing. I mean, anyone can trod through hours and hours of teaching. But can you get the essence of it in a few sentences? That's a challenge. The Meyer information says that our solar system had three planets with life that could support life. Mars, Earth, and another planet that's sometimes called Marduk and sometimes has a Tiamat, it's sometimes called. I'm forgetting what the Meyer people call it most of the time. But it was a little bit larger than Earth. And people came from the Sirius system and settled on these three worlds. They had a lower class with them and a higher class. The lower class had been genetically manipulated to fight in wars and protect the upper class. And their lifespan had been decreased to about 100 years, 120 years. Now, it's very interesting that the book of Genesis talks about this, but in a different light, in a different aspect. But it says here, then the Lord said, my spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal. His days will be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, the men of renown. Now, Dr. Lorraine Day says, oh, this is nothing. You know, these are just heroes. These are just, other people say, these were giants. I mean, giants, like 30 feet tall, like giants we can't even imagine. And these giants ate people. In the book of Enoch, it talks about this in detail. They were crazy. the purpose of the Lord in judgment. This is Genesis 6:5. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. Now that's interesting. That is the only verse in the Bible I can ever remember where it talks about God feeling pain. Wow. I'm not going to comment on that right now, but that's pretty amazing. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I created, from the face of the earth, men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds of the air. I am grieved that I have made them. He's grieved. That's all. He's in pain. He's grieved. Now, my vision of the creator of the universe is he doesn't really have these kind of feelings. Are these anthropomorphisms to describe God in terms of humanity so that we can understand him? Or are these to be taken literally? So then we have the whole story of Noah and the building of the ark and all that. But there's, if you get into the book of Enoch, and I don't have it myself, at least I can't find it right now. I thought at one time that I had it, but I can't seem to place it at the moment. And the Meyer information talks in great detail about these giants being on there. I shouldn't say in great detail, but it does talk about them. And it talks about how huge they were. So, anyway, maybe we'll come back to Genesis 6 again next week. I should have a guest. And I don't know if he has, I don't think he has the book of Enoch, but he has the Meyer teaching. There is a book in the Meyer teaching that talks about this. That would be a good one if I can remember to get back to that. We were talking about prayer a little bit, and we've been down about the last 15 minutes here. Here I am, talking and talking and talking. I'm so used to playing clips, or I'm used to asking questions to a guest. Wishes and prayers. Again, we're back to the Meyer teaching, so we have a lot of perspectives here. My other thoughts. Wishes and prayers are never petitions to a god or saint. Rather, they are thoughts generated by oneself, which are fed back out of the consciousness and inner self to one's own consciousness and inner self, to thereby create a fulfillment. If wishes and prayers are directed in this way at one's own consciousness and inner self, then the thoughts and the actions are thereby identically maintained. Then a success of the fulfillment is also granted. This is quite the opposite of directing wishes and prayers at a divinity or to a saint. In this form, the human being namely is and remains prisoner of his or her thoughts and of himself, and cannot hope for realization of his wishes and prayers. The human being only obtains true inner freedom when he is conscious of the might of his own thoughts and of the fact that he is always and is in every case master of his own destiny. Boy, you know, there are days when I feel like I'm the master of my destiny. And there are days when I do not feel like I'm the master of my destiny. I feel like I'm being, you know, I'm on a ship and the waves are going back and forth. That's probably just my own thoughts that are flipping me back and forth like that. Do not allow your thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. Steer your thoughts like a captain steers his ship. Nurture your thoughts. clarify your thoughts, strengthen my thoughts. So that's what we should be doing instead of flipping around on the waves. I remember the story in the Bible of Christ, and it says in the Bible that he was walking on the water, and the disciples were out on the boat, and the boat was rocking back and forth, and lightning and thunder and wind, and Christ just walked right on the water, and I believe he actually got on the ship with them, and then told the waves to be quiet, and everything went quiet, you know. And I think he's trying to tell us that we have that same ability if we would just believe. So maybe we start with smaller things and slowly build up. This is quite the opposite to directing wishes and prayers at a divinity or a saint. In this form, the human being namely is and remains a prisoner of his thoughts and cannot hope for realization of wishes and prayers. The human being only obtains true inner freedom when he is conscious of the might of his thoughts. So you have to be conscious of the might of your own thoughts and the fact that he or she is always and in every case, the master of his or her own destiny. And always, therefore, determines and forms this himself. Precisely through the might of his thoughts. This is an irrevocable and profound truth. Which also, however, allows it to be recognized that the human being has to constantly battle against many kinds of circumstances in his life. But what does that mean in light of the truth, other than that one constantly revolts against an effect, while at the same time the cause is nourished, tended, and maintained the whole time in the consciousness of the thoughts? The cause can be extremely manifold and can be a form which can be of a conscious as well as an unconscious nature. Begun by unconscious weaknesses and quirks, it can extend to conscious vices, criminal ambitions, and human disdaining asartan. But no matter what the causes are, they prevent or delay, and extraordinarily stubbornly, the human being's efforts to become master of them, to find a suitable way to dismantle them or to avoid them. And viewed in the relationship, the fact is that the human beings want to improve their life circumstances. However, they are in no way willing to change themselves. The reason for that simply lies in the fact that while better life circumstances are indeed desired, one does not want to make allowance for the effort for that. So if you want better circumstances in your life, you have to put forth effort to change those. For a change in oneself in all necessary realms, to monitor the thoughts. That's what I was talking about earlier. We got to learn to monitor ourselves. And to direct them in a neutral, positive, equalized way is for many already a work of self-violation, for which reason it is studiously refrained from. And since the human being thinks in this way, he or she remains bound and a prisoner of himself without making an effort to create an effective inner freedom. However, If the human being does not shrink back from an honest self-examination, then in his or her finding of inner freedom and finding of the self, he will recognize and reach a zeal for which the entire innermost nature yearns. And that goes for all realms of life, thus for the purely external and material matters, as well as for the things of the inner nature, of the consciousness, of the psyche, the morality, the character, and fundamentally, naturally, the spirit, which, as the highest of all creational goods, and as a tiny fragment of creation itself, enlivens the body. You know, that's another point here. Each time that we reincarnate, our spirit form leaves the realm of the dead. Not even a good term, really, because we're not even dead when we're dead, because the spirit form is still alive in the spirit world. And what we're doing at that time is gathering wisdom, gathering, processing the knowledge. You know, like I had said, that there's like a little invisible recorder that comes on. When you do or think something that's neutral, positive, that has spiritual value, it's like a little recorder comes on in your spirit, and that information is recorded. It could have been your reading, like I was reading in the Might of the Thoughts book there. And when you read that, that's all neutral, positive information. So this little recorder comes on in your spirit, and it records this information. Now, your conscious mind may only dwell on it for a short time, or you may dwell on it for days and weeks. But the spirit form never forgets. It's almost like a machine in that sense. It's continually learning. So when you die and the spirit comes out of your body, it takes with it the consciousness, the material consciousness, the spiritual consciousness. And then you take that with you over into the other realm, which is like an energy band around our planet. And then there's a special place. It's referred to by the term block. So there's an area in the other realm of the other world where everything that your spirit form recorded is being processed. So that can be part of what your spirit form knows and understands. So when you reincarnate, you bring that information with you. That information is not lost. Each reincarnation, you start a little bit wiser than you were in your last life, or maybe a lot wiser, depending on how much you learned. But that wisdom is the purpose of our life. That's why we're reincarnating again and again and again. Because each cycle through, we get more wisdom, more wisdom, more wisdom. And then eventually, after millions, even billions of years, we merge back. The spirit form merges back with the universal consciousness and brings in all the knowledge and all the information of all those lifetimes. So that's the purpose of life, if you've ever wondered. What is the purpose of all of this? So you're learning wisdom through your physical lives that you bring back and share with the universal consciousness at the end of all your reincarnations. And we have 40 to 60 million reincarnations in a physical body, and then we go to kind of half physical state, half spiritual, and then we have millions of other reincarnations. I think it's 30 or 40 million, I'm guessing. And then we turn to a pure spirit form, completely spirit form, and then there's billions of reincarnations after in the purely spirit form. So that was kind of an overview quickly. So our spirit form is a tiny fragment of creation itself, which enlivens the body. So without your spirit form, you would have no physical life. Even if it were the human being's single zeal to live only for pleasure, to live an existence in laziness, or to only accumulate wealth, then he or she would have to live and be ready to make great personal sacrifices in order to be able to reach his or her zeal. So you'd have to make, even if you only live for pleasure, you would have to make great sacrifices just to live for pleasure. I think we're done, folks. Boy, that was a quick hour. Where did that go? Next week, I have a guest for you. More Meyer information, though. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Of an organization to the madness, discussing the ever-changing dynamics of being both physically and mentally prepared for a plethora of possible outcomes to our future and present. A look into the latest technologies, new scientific discoveries, and how they might be used in connection to the human domain and controlling it, ancient cultures and places. Be warned. This is an opinionated look through headlines. Guests that are not afraid to question the narrative. A little bit of crazy ramblings of a stoner conspiracy factist that pushes constitutional concepts. The place and the time are the same, another dimension we call Mountain High Time. Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Mountain High Time. Right here on Revolution.radio, where information never sleeps and truth breaks the spell.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's iPhone banking. Welcome to the Crypt.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids, dealing with the most important topics.